everybody. Jeff Jones here. Welcome to the weekly Chase Oaks Church podcast. Before we dive in, I want to encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel and download the Chase Oaks Church app. The app is the best place to catch up on messages, engage with our community, and stay in the loop with everything going on around here. Most importantly, my hope is that today's message inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey. Here we go. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to At the Movies. And that song, you know, Fly Me to the Moon, that's the movie we're looking at, is Fly Me to the Moon. An Apple movie, great movie. The song, it's one of those that kind of gets in your head. So I'm hoping this week that, you know, Chase Oakers, as we're at work or driving down the road or whatever, there'll be a lot of people going, Fly Me to the Moon. You know, which is a lot better than like 1-877 cars for kids or something like that, right? So we're doing you a favor. And the movie, too, is, I think, it's a really well-done movie. It's on Apple. It's an Apple movie, Apple original movie, but super well done. We'll get to see some of it. But I think for me, it's also maybe even more interesting than most because I grew up in Huntsville, Alabama, and, you know, the movie's about the space race. It's about the mission to get man on the moon. And Huntsville was where the Saturn V rocket, that's where Wernher von Braun, all those guys came, and they built the Saturn V rocket that was the rocket that propelled all the Apollo missions. And my dad was a space engineer. My father-in-law also, a lot of my friends' dads as kids were involved in, you know, this in the space industry. My brother went to elementary school with Peter von Braun, Werner's son. So just like a part of life, you know, and growing up. And therefore, it was very interesting seeing it from that perspective because I was born in 1966. We went to the moon in 69, so I didn't really catch that part of it very much. So that was fun. But also, the movie... As it plays with space race and all that kind of stuff, also posits kind of a question about the veracity of the moon landing. Not so much did we go or not, but is what we saw on TV, what we saw televised, what the world saw, was that staged or was it real? And how would you know if we actually went to the moon or if what we saw was the actual moon landing or something staged? And that's going to get us to what we're talking about today. And what we're talking about today is going to sound really heady, but it actually matters on the ground of our lives. Today, we're talking about epistemology. Don't you feel smarter already? Right? In fact, if you know people who go to other churches, you know, this next week, just ask them, hey, what did you guys talk about at church this week? And, you know, they'll say something, maybe prayer or something like that. And you'll say, oh, well, that's cute. We talked about epistemology, you know, a biblical epistemology. And what is epistemology? Epistemology is the study of, it's thinking about how we know what we know. How we know what we believe to be true is true. How we know what we know. How we think. And that's really important because how you and I think dictates everything in our life. If our thinking is off, our life will be off. If our thinking about relationships, ourselves, about God is off, all those parts of our lives will also be off. If we're skewed here in our thinking, we'll be skewed everywhere. In fact, spiritual transformation happens first in the mind. You know, Paul says in Romans 12, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Transformation is about starting right here, renewing our thinking. And so today, as we talk about epistemology, that's our word for the day, class, epistemology, it's not just a heady thing. It affects everything. And how do we know what we know, and how do we know it's true, and what does that mean in terms of how we live life? That's what we're going to be talking about. Now, that gets us into the theme of the movie. So the movie is really centered around a fictional character named Kelly Jones, who is portrayed as like one of the world's best marketing and branding experts. She's also a person with a past. She's had multiple identities. She's kind of a con artist that's very smart, but has worked her way up to where she is the most sought after branding and marketing expert in the country. at a time where the government is concerned because the space race in the Cold War with the Soviet Union, all that, we're losing. You know, they were the first to actually get to space and manned space flight and all that kind of stuff. And it was also a time in which our country really needed a win. You know, in the 1960s, the Vietnam War and protests and all kinds of stuff, that the government really wanted us not only to get to the moon, but everybody to make sure this is a sure thing and to get behind it. But people were starting to lose belief. They were starting to lose interest because the project was over budget, the project was over time. And so in the movie, this government agent, not from NASA, from somewhere else, government agent comes and approaches her and says, hey, I can erase your past, I can do all that, but what we need you to do is to sell the moon and to sell the project to the country, to get this country excited about it so that we can continue it. And she does an incredible job. She's hired. She gets to know this guy named Cole, who's the flight director, the director of the moon program at NASA, and they market the moon and get the whole country excited about the moon, and little kids are wanting to be astronauts, and people are drinking Tang. Do you remember Tang? And eating Tootsie Rolls, because somebody said they never did Tootsie Rolls in space, but I remember thinking that as a kid. They did do Tang. And so everybody's all excited, and everybody's believing, and it captures the imagination of the country. She does a great job, so great that now expectations are high, belief is high. That government agent comes back to her to say, hey, we've got to make sure this works. Like, we can't try to get to the moon and not get to the moon. The world needs to see America win. America needs a win. So no matter what, they're going to see a win, and we're going to make sure that whatever happens in reality, people will see America getting to the moon. Let's watch the scene. All right. So the director gets to work and they start building a fake moon set as a backup plan. But as time goes on, NASA doesn't know about this. Cole Davis, the director, doesn't know about that. But as time goes on, she realizes that this is not the backup plan. This is going to be the plan because they don't want any risk. So even if the moon landing is successful, they don't want to show that in case something happens. They want the sure thing. And so what she finds out is that actually what the world is going to see, no matter what, is what was the backup plan. What they're going to see is the fake moon landing. And even for her, that's too much. And so as we're going to see, she brings Cole Davis from NASA in so they can try to fight against that and bring about reality, not fake. Let's watch. Okay, so they get to work, and we'll get to that, and you see, okay, did we see the real thing, or did we see something fake, if you're nervous about it? We'll get to that. But how do you know what's real, and how do you know what's fake? That's really what we're talking about is, again, the word for the day, class, epistemology. Epistemology is the word for the day. To come up with a biblical epistemology, a way of thinking about truth, of how we know what we know, because all of us have one. All of us operate, we have an operating system in our mind that decides what is true and what we base our life on and what we believe. And if it's skewed, then our life will be skewed in ways we don't even know. And what feels right may not be right at all. And how do we know? What's a biblical epistemology? And I'm not going to try to be exhaustive today, but what I am going to do is try to say, okay, there's some ways as Western, modern humans, we've grown up in this environment, we've grown up in this culture, just the way we think about truth, the way we think about knowledge, the way we decide what's true, that is actually really skewed compared to what the way God thinks and what he reveals in the Bible to be true. And the way I'm going to do that is to focus on three key words of the Nicene Creed. So the Nicene Creed was done in 325 AD, when Christianity was still fairly young, old enough that there was a lot of alternative versions out there of truth purporting to be Christianity. So much so that the church, worldwide church, decided, okay, we need to come up with a statement. We need to come up with something that we can say, this is what Christianity is. That there's lots of things that we can disagree on, but what is the core of Christianity? Like, if you don't have this, it's no longer Christianity. And that's the Nicene Creed, which is still to this day a very significant thing. About 1.5 billion people this weekend will say the Nicene Creed in their church services, both Catholic as well as various Protestant traditions. We're going to focus, the Nicene Creed is like 226 words, I think. We're going to focus on three of them to help us out. The first three, it's actually repeated multiple times. But these words, and they're going to sound insignificant, but as we're going to see, they're not. We believe in. That's the first three words. We believe in. And what we're going to see in modern American Western thinking, we wouldn't write it like that. We would say, I know that, not we believe in. And that's a very different way to think. So I'm going to go word by word. We're going to start with we, and in the way, in helping us understand how we need to think differently. So we, you and I do not live in a we culture. We live in an I culture. We live in an individualistic culture. And therefore, truth is seen as relative. So what's true for you is true for you, and that's great. And I have a different truth. That's your truth, and I'm not going to judge you. You're right because that's what you believe, and you're sincere, and you're right. The truth is relative to the individual. That's a very Western thought. And therefore, we can even be opposites in terms of what the truth claim is. It'd be exactly opposite, but they're both right because that's right for you, and what I believe is right for me. And in American ears, that can sound like, well, amen. But that's not biblical. I mean, really, common sense starts to stretch common sense, right? I mean, you could say, well, that's not a table. It doesn't matter if I think this is a table or not, right? There's truth outside of what I believe, truth outside of my opinion about truth. That's the first part of we, that there is truth. We don't make up truth. We discover truth, or God reveals truth. Truth exists outside of what we think. And in an I culture, we need to understand also biblically that the process of discovering truth and building our lives around truth and understanding what God has revealed is not solitary. Spirituality is not an I thing, it's a we thing. That's why most of the Bible, when you see these Bible commands, we hear them as individual, but they're not. Almost always, and in Greek you can tell, they're plural commands. You all, you all, you all. Because Christianity is a team sport. And the way we come around truth and discover truth is not on our own. It's not solitary. It's actually communal. That's why Paul in Ephesians 4 says this. Now, these are the gifts Christ gave to the church, the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, and pastors and teachers, different kinds of leaders. Their responsibility is to equip God's people to do his work and build up the church, the body of Christ. This will continue until we all come to such unity in our faith and knowledge of God's Son that we will be mature in the Lord, measuring up to the full and complete standard of Christ. Then we will no longer be immature like children. We won't be tossed and blown about by every wind of new teaching, things that purport to be true but that aren't true. We will not be influenced when people try to trick us with lies so clever they sound like the truth. Instead, we will speak the truth in love, growing in every way more and more like Christ, who is the head of the body, his church. The way you and I grow to maturity, where we can be discerning about what is true and what is fake and what's real and what's not, it's not just our personal relationship with Jesus. That's important. We do have a personal relationship with Jesus if we want it. But that's really not the heart of Christianity. Our personal relationship with Jesus is actually shared with others. It's a shared life, a shared existence. And we one another our way, we commune our way, we do life together in ways that we help each other come around truth and find maturity, which flies in the face of American individualism. And what you see a lot even right now is people are frustrated with Christianity and frustrated with church. And some bozo even wrote a book about rebranding Christianity that talks about that. But what some people are doing with that is saying, well, okay, I'm all into Jesus, my personal relationship with Jesus. I'm just not going to do church. I'm just not going to do, you know, the community part, the religion part. But I'm going to I still believe in Jesus. I mean, I pray and it's about me and Jesus. And you can't follow Jesus into a solitary life like that. A Jesus way of life is a we way of life, is a shared way of life. The other thing about we, before I move on to believe, in a communal culture, is that if it's just about me and God, it's easy when I have doubts and I have questions, and we will, to be like, well, I don't know if I believe. Like when we have a crisis of faith, when something happens in our life and it just throws us off, and we're like, I don't even know if I believe anymore. If we're on our own, then people just jettison. But we're not designed to be on our own. When you're in a community, you realize, oh, wait a minute. There may be times that I'll question my faith. There may be times I have a crisis of faith. But I'm surrounded by other people, and we're walking together, and we're going to help you. And I may not have enough faith on my own, but people can have faith for me. I remember years ago, somebody saying to me in a difficult time, a crisis of faith kind of time, he's like, you know what, right now, you don't even have to trust God. You don't even have to pray, because I'm going to pray, and I'm going to trust God for you. And at some point, that'll be reversed. I'll need you to do the same for me. But right now, it's like if we're all in a boat and we're all rowing, then just take a rest, because we're in the boat together, and we're going to get through this. And it's okay to have doubts. It's okay to have questions. But I'm going to have faith for you. That's the we. And then the believe, which helps us when we say, okay, what about doubt and all that? Believe. Those who wrote the creed didn't say, we know. They said, we believe. And those are two very different things. It's a difference between faith and certainty. Now, there's some things that God has revealed, and there's some things that we know that we can be certain of because God's revealed them. They're right here, and that's great. I'm not saying that there's not things that we know. However, our faith is way bigger than what we can know intellectually, than what we can prove. And in Western mindset, it's about, you know, scientific method and what I can prove and what I can demonstrate. And I can't see it to be true unless I can be certain through, you know, scientific method or proof or whatever. And that's a very tiny way to think, because God is so much bigger than what we can understand. He's so much bigger than what we can fathom. And that's why the New Testament calls Christianity a mystery, not a certainty. Again, it doesn't mean there's some things that we don't know. We do. But it's just so much bigger than what we know. We don't limit it to what we can know, because he invites us into this mystery of expanding our knowledge of him and truth, which we'll be doing for all eternity, because God is inexhaustible. And that should give us a lot of humility. Hebrews 11, it says, faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. When Thomas, after the resurrection, Jesus sees Thomas and sees, oh yeah, you are Jesus and you are resurrected. And Jesus says, well, blessed are those who will be able, you know, who are not going to be around when Jesus is in heaven. He said, blessed are those who can believe without seeing. There's a difference between faith and seeing. And what we know about God, we know a lot, but there's just so much more to know. 1 Corinthians, Paul says this. He says, now we see things imperfectly, meaning on this life, like puzzling reflections in a mirror, but then we will see everything with perfect clarity. All that I know now is partial and incomplete, but then I will know everything completely, just as God now knows me completely. If you're waiting to figure everything out before you say, okay, I'm gonna follow Jesus, then good luck. Because it's not gonna happen. We're not gonna figure it all out. It's a faith journey. Faith of saying, okay, I don't understand everything, but I understand enough. And it's not that there's not logic or something behind it. It's just so much bigger than that. And to say, I'm ready to bring my questions and doubts with me on this journey. Because we'll never have it all figured out. And if you're a Christian, you've been a Christian a long time, and you think you have it all figured out, you really don't have anything figured out. Because the more you know Jesus, the more you realize this is so much bigger than I thought. That's what Paul is saying. And when he says it's like seeing through a mirror, Mirrors 2,000 years ago were not great. They were not like the one you looked at when you got ready for church. 2,000 years ago, mirrors were pretty cloudy and pretty distorted. And it's just saying, hey, let's just have some humility. That yes, there's some things we can know, but God is so much bigger than that. And so it's not just we know, it's bigger. It's we believe. And then we believe in versus that. We believe in. I think if it was written today, people might say, like, I know that. I did an interview on the Rebranding Christianity podcast with a guy named Glenn Packiam who wrote a book on the Nicene Creed. And we have a conversation about this that takes it deeper. And he made that point that, hey, you know, we tend to think, okay, Christianity is believing that. And believing that is these abstract truths. Like, you know, these, like the Nicene Creed, which is a wonderful statement. We have a doctrinal statement. You can see it on our website of things that we believe to be true, propositional truth. And there's a place for that, and it's important. Don't hear me say that's not important. But that's not the object of our faith. Christianity, the object of our faith is a person, not a list of things to believe. It's the person of Jesus. And therefore, a life with Jesus isn't simply, it's not simply saying yes to some statements, to some beliefs, even though that's part of it. There are some things we believe and that we need to believe to have a relationship with Jesus. It's just so much more than that. It's as there's some intellectual assent, but the object of our faith is the person of Jesus. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Truth is personified in Jesus. Jesus embodies the truth. And therefore, walking in the truth is not simply believing a few things. Walking in the truth involves that, but it's following Jesus into a whole new way of life and submitting our life to him and saying, God, thank you for what you've revealed and what you will continue to reveal to me. And together, God, we're going to walk with you into a whole new life, change our thinking so that you can change our life. So it's not so much I know that. That'd be a very Western kind of way to think, Western modern way to think. But instead, we, because it's communal, not individual, believe. It's faith, which is bigger than certainty. In. Not just that, but in. We believe in. That also is important when we think about the truth, not just about the world and about things like that, but the truth about you as well and the truth about me. Because what we believe to be true about us forms our identity. And if our thinking is skewed about us, then our whole life is going to be skewed. And I would say that every one of us in this room, in some way or another, doesn't quite have the truth about us just right. That's part of growing in Christ, is getting that right and trying to say, okay, God, what do you say about me? What have you revealed to be true about me? And aligning our lives around that, not around other things. And that's a big part of this movie too. So the movie is about the space race, but it's also about this transformation that happens in Kelly Jones's life, who's lived a lie her whole life, lived multiple lies her whole life. And she has to decide if she's going to come around truth or not and come around the truth about her or not. And that gets us to this scene. Now, we're going to see what happens and which, you know, moon landing version saw. But I did want to stop there to think about the truth about you and me, because what we choose to believe about us really matters. And the good news is God has revealed truth. It's right here. And as much as we can align on what he's revealed to be true about our life, the better. To not think just what life says about me, what my failure says about me, what my shame says about me, what other people say about me to be true, but instead to say, man, I want to build my identity around what God says to be true about me. In fact, I've only got like 2 minutes to make this point, so I'm just going to read the point. That God invites us to form our identity around what he says about us, not what others say, not what shame whispers, not what failures shout, not even what your inner voice speaks. What God says is you're forgiven, free, redeemed, chosen, loved, valued. I could keep going. But those are true about you. You're not random. You're chosen by God. You're His loved child. If you know Jesus, you've been redeemed. You've been forgiven. Those all come out of one chapter in the Bible, Ephesians chapter 1, the words that I chose. And what I'm going to encourage you to do this summer is, I don't know what you do when you wake up. You look on your phone and look at email, or you do Wordle or whatever. But when you look at your phone the first time, I'm going to encourage all of us to do this summer, is go on the Bible app. If you don't have it, download. It's called the Bible app. And read Ephesians 1. Just that one chapter. As many mornings as you think about it. Ephesians 1. And just ask God the question, God, what do you want to say? What's the truth about me? Who am I in your eyes? And read Ephesians 1. If you do that over a period of time, it will radically change your view of you and who you are and who you are in God's perspective. Because what we think matters, and what we think about us really matters. But we got to get back to the movie. I wish I could preach a whole sermon on that. But we're going to get back to the movie. Because you got to say, okay, what happened? Like, which version did they show? Which version did they see? So you've got the real moon landing going on, right? And you've got the fake set. And the government's plan is to show the fake set. NASA doesn't know that, but this other government agency. And they work to make sure that as much as possible, we'll show the real thing, not the fake thing. But let's watch. Sorry to cut in on the president, but. So they end up showing, in case you wonder, they do show the real one, which turns out to be a good thing in the movie because a cat ends up running across the fake set. And it would have been disastrous to explain how a cat got on the moon. If anything could, a cat probably could, but you know they didn't have to worry about that. But again, the whole thing gets back to, okay, what is truth? How do we know? And I want to come back to, because you think, well, okay, this is kind of heady. We're talking about epistemology. I don't even know what that, are you going to remember that tomorrow? It's kind of heady. Like, what do I do with this? Well, let's talk about it. In the same category, we believe in. So on the we. For some of you, your big takeaway today might be, if you're fairly isolated and you're not really growing in connection with other people who are growing in their connection with Jesus, then according to the New Testament, you're actually not growing to maturity. Because the only way we grow to maturity is in connection with other people. We grow closer to God as we're growing closer to others who are also growing closer to God. And that's why this church is not just built around rows, but built around circles, and why we have small groups. And part of what we do in small, there's a lot of things that happen when we come in here like you are. I mean, way to go. And we can, preach and teach from what God has revealed. I mean, this is truth. And God's revealed truth. And we can go deeper and deeper in that. But there's only so much we can do even here, right? So what a lot of our small groups do is they take what we've talked about here and they take it deeper and say, okay, let's talk about that. Let's look at that passage again. Let's talk about what God is saying here. What would that mean to really live this out in our life? And how are we going to encourage each other to do that? As they do life together in small groups, if you're not in a small group, let me encourage you to get in a small group. And then believe. Like I said, for some, you may be waiting for certainty. And you're not following Jesus because it's like, no, I've got all this stuff. I've got to answer and all this stuff figure out. And I get that is, I get there's some things you need to work out, and Chase Oaks is a safe place to do that. We encourage that. But just know that this is a faith journey. And therefore, it means I'm going to bring my doubts and my questions with me. I'm not going to have everything figured out. There's some things that we can know and some things we can work through. Absolutely. It's just so much bigger. And for those of us who are believers and believers a while to also understand, for us too, this is a faith journey. We're invited into mystery. We're invited into a life of faith that's so much bigger than just what we can comprehend. One of my favorite seminary professors, that's what got me to Dallas Seminary. was a guy named Lanier Burns, who was in charge of the theology department. And I've shared this before in years past, but it was my first class at seminary. He's a very animated guy. And I remember somebody asked a question about God, and Lanier, you know, they raised their hand. He said, yes, asked the question. He said, thank you for that question. Let me give you my answer. And he went. And he's like, okay, let me go on. And he goes on. And the guy's like, Dr. Burns, I'm not sure what that meant. And he said, I'll ask your question again. So he did. He asked it again. And Dr. Burns, Lanier, said, he did that. He's like, I hope that's clear. And then he went on. And then and the student was like, Dr. Burns, I'm sorry, I don't know what that is. And he said, oh, that's right, I haven't talked about that yet. He said, my job as a theologian is to know everything that we can know that God has revealed, because we can count on that. But also to have humility to know that God is so much bigger and deeper than we can comprehend. And what you did is you put me up against my boundaries. And when we get up against our boundaries, you know what we do? We fall on our knees and we worship a God that's bigger than we are. And he had us as a class. He said, I want everybody to get out of your chair. Let's get on our knees and let's worship God. Because in this class, we're going to spend this whole semester learning a lot of things about God that he's revealed. But it's just a tiny, tiny thing compared to the immensity of who he really is. And we're going to worship him. And we did. This is a faith journey. And it's a relational one. We believe in. And I want to give us the opportunity, because truth is found not just in some propositions. Truth is found in a person, the person of Jesus. He embodies truth. He is the truth. Yes, he revealed truth. He revealed things that are true. But he is the truth. And if you want to live in the truth, it means living in a relationship with the one who embodies it. And when we choose to follow him, it's not just agreeing to some things. Yeah, there's some things you agree to. But it's saying, okay, God, I want to live my whole life on your path. We talked a couple weeks ago, a wide welcome to a narrow path. I want to submit to your path. I want to submit to your truth and to your beauty and to everything that you're calling me to. And this is going to be, for eternity, I'll be doing this. But God, I want to follow you into a whole new way of life. It's a relationship. So let's bow our heads together in prayer. And as you think about your relationship with Jesus, for some of you, this may be your opportunity to begin one. And to say, God, I think I'm starting to get it here. It's not just, Christianity is not just a list of things that some people believe or a list of practices that they do. It's actually a relationship with you. That, yes, has belief, has practice, but it's a relationship with you. And I want to know you. I want to walk with you into a new life. You came to make it possible for me to know you. And you want to know me. And you're just waiting for me to say yes. And I say yes. And for you who've made that decision, or if you've made that decision before, to think about your life. And in that journey, if you find yourself disconnected, then maybe just say, God, help me take a step toward connection. If you find yourself faltering in faith right now and having doubts and struggles, it's actually part of a faith journey that happens, because we don't know everything. But faith says, God, I don't know everything, but I'm going to trust you because you do. And so, God, give me the ability to hang in there. Give me the ability to trust you. And then as we think about, we believe in, just ask him, God, what does it look like for me? What next step are you calling me in my relationship with you? What is it that you're calling me? What is the step? What does it mean to get back on path or on the path or further down the path? Lord, we thank you that you came to reveal truth so that we could live and flourish in it. Because the truth sets us free. It's not a burden, it sets us free. And we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.